are going to welcome Prof. Yinzi Ma. Prof. Is from the Department of Physics in the Faculty of Science at Stellenbosch University. He recently delivered his inaugural lecture on unraveling the mysteries of the universe. He explained how he uses innovative observational methods and computational tools to help deepen our understanding of the fundamental laws of the universe and to unravel its mysteries. Very many mysteries. And he now joins us on the line to share his observations with us. Welcome, Prof. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for the invitation.
Prof, I'm going to ask you what should be academic questions in a very unacademic way, if you don't mind. I'm going to go off script from time to time, if you don't mind.
No problem.
I want to start off with the Chinese lunar mission that landed and is exploring the dark side of the moon. Why would it go there?
Well, there's many things that you can do on the dark side of the moon. For example, our Earth's atmosphere actually blocks a lot of radiation that coming from the other part of the universe, that it will basically a barrier that we need to go over. So sending some, you know, instrument to the back of the moon would really going to escape this barrier and really probe something, you know, deep in the space. And also there's other implications as well, you know, testing gravity and also testing the, you know, different scientific experiments in the a completely different experiment, like almost vacuum experiment and so on. So there's a lot of implication that one can do with this mission.
So it's breaking new ground, essentially, for humankind.
Absolutely, yeah, because we have a completely different environment that is not realizable easily in the lab on the Earth.
Okay, did you find any UFO bases on the other side?
If I find, I will let you know immediately.
You promise.
I promise.
Well, that would throw your theories into disarray if you did find it, wouldn't it?
Sorry, I didn't hear your question.
I said it would throw your theories of the universe into disarray if you did find such a UFO base on the dark side of the moon.
Of course, that will revolutionize many science, and not just physics, but many science immediately, and just really kind of give us a completely new understanding of the life and also the existence of a planet and so many things. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to go back there a little later on, but first I want you to talk to us about Webb Alice and its discoveries, remarkable discoveries in deep space at the beginning of time. Some discoveries even maybe causing you as a professor to rethink the very premise that you speak from, the laws of space and time.
Yes, of course, because we measure this micro background radiation from the Planck satellites, and also we measure many of the interesting signals from the distant galaxies, and also the, you know, the radio data and so on. And they coherently bring up a picture that the majority of matter in the universe is not known, something called dark matter, and another substance called dark energy. These two darks are absolutely mysterious clouds that basically suspended on the top of our head, and we don't know its nature, and we still need to discover the, you know, the fundamental aspect of it, of them, actually, yeah.
Yeah, so it's also questioning fundamentally the Big Bang theory, is it not?
Yes, in somehow, if we put into the models of this two substances we don't know, but a visible model, things like the cold dark matter, the non-interacting dark matter, and also the cosmological constant indicated by Einstein, the model works. So far, at the phenomenological level, that the model can work and can predict what we see here in the universe, but it's that these two things are not known in details. So I would say the model of the Big Bang, something called the hot Big Bang model, really works, you know, given there's no indication that it doesn't work, but what really are the dark matter and dark energy are unknown here.
Okay, Prof. Yinzi Ma, our guest, with the Department of Physics in the Faculty of Science at Stellenbosch University. I know there's a lot of interest in the topic that you're sharing with us, Prof, and we do not have the benefit of a really quality line. So if you are moving around, maybe that is not advantageous to this conversation. I want to hear everything. We want to hear everything. We want to pick your mind completely on this particular matter. And if you can assist, we'll obviously appreciate it. Prof, let's,
no problem. No.
Thank you so much. So again, we get back to dark energy and dark matter, which constitutes over 90% of the universe. Can we even claim to know anything about it with such a huge part, not part of the equation?
For dark matter, we know that there is no electromagnetic radiation from it. There's no, extremely small level of interaction of dark matter with other substances. So therefore, we can't see them directly. You know, it's almost invisible. But for dark energy, we know it's some mysterious substance that drives the universe accelerated expansion. So so for dark energy, we know even less. It's some anti-gravity matter that just makes universe accelerated expanding. For dark matter, we know it has gravity, but no electromagnetic radiation, so we can't identify a particle with it.
So dark energy, you say, is mysterious. Is it magical?
It's very magical. So what happened is that when Einstein wrote down his theory of relativity in 1916, he realized gravity is actually contracted, because gravity pulls everything together. So he thought the universe should be static. So he invoked such a term called lambda in his equation and trying to balance out the effect of gravity. But later on, Edwin Hubble find universe is actually expanding, not really static. So Einstein think, oh, let's then give up that term. He called that the biggest blunder of his career, of his life, which is to invoke that lambda term. However, in 1998, astronomers find universe is not just expanding, but accelerated expanding. It's like if you ride a bicycle, the bicycle can move forward, but it can slow down. But in 1998, people find the bicycle of universe is actually accelerated expanding. If you know, speed, it becomes larger and larger. Then you need that lambda term. You have to retrieve that lambda term in order to explain this phenomena. So that lambda is really mysterious, and we still don't know its nature. Yeah, it's just a term adding into the equation that can fit the observation at the current time, and we don't really have a good theory for it.
Okay, so you touch on the expanding universe there, and it's expanding at a faster pace every single moment of our lives. What is it expanding into?
Well, that's a good question. It doesn't expand into anything. No boundary, no age. No boundary, no edge of the universe. So it's like, I mean, when you say, when you ask a question, what it expands into, you may think about a balloon that in our three-dimensional space, that if the balloon is expanding, then it's expanding into the space and so on. But actually, it doesn't. Our space itself is actually a really balloon. There is no balloon embedded into something else. So when you think about it, if we are, you know, like a little ant pulling on the balloon, then the balloon is expanding, then basically the whole space is expanding. But however, there's no substance that the balloon is expanding into.
Mm. The balloon eventually will burst. Will the universe burst as well?
That's an interesting question. Maybe. In a billion of years' time, nothing to worry immediately. As I mentioned, the lambda, something called Einstein's cosmological constant, or you can think about that as a vacuum energy, if that keep on the action, if that keep on driving the universe accelerated expansion, then billions of years later, we may enter into such an extraordinary state, which we call Big Rip, which all of the vacuum seem to be torn apart from each other, and the universe will become extremely cool and cold and in a very low-density environment. But that's billions of years later. I don't think you need to worry about it.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I'd preferred in writing, Professor Yinzi Ma is my guest from the University of Stellenbosch, the Department of Physics and the Faculty of Science. And he's recently delivered his inaugural lecture on unraveling the mysteries of the universe. And as you may tell from my voice and my enthusiasm, I really can monopolize the prof, but I don't want to. So if you want to find out more about the mysteries, well, of space and time, and hey, mind as well, let's put it to him and let's see where he takes us. I'm really intrigued, Prof, that we're still holding Einstein central to all the observations and all the computations that comes with Einstein's a gift to us. You say it's going to stand the test of time.
Yes, so far, I mean, Einstein proposed his theory in 1919, published his theory in 1916, and so far, we didn't find any evidence against that theory of relativity. So if Einstein ever know, he would really laugh about us or think, or maybe, you know, just to laugh and tell us that I told you this is a theory.
that's
kind of magic. Yeah.
The other theory is gravity, yet you apportion the principle of gravity to dark matter.
Yeah, there are something called alternative theories of dark gravity. There's many of them, but unfortunately, we don't see any evidence of these alternative theories. And also, these theories tend to be a bit more complicated than the Einstein's theory of relativity, the general relativity. And as you know, in physics, that we have this something called Occam's eraser, that if a theory that is simpler and is able to explain a wide range of phenomena, then we regard that theory as the a better theory or the fundamental nature. And over those theories which are overcomplicated and have a lot of free, degree of freedom to tune. Mm. So in that sense, the Einstein theory of relativity, the general relativity, is currently the simplest and yet working theory. And that there's no evidence to go against it. So I think that's really a beautiful theory to work on.
I want to just keep you there, just on gravity being a theory. It's not a theory for me. If I jump off the balcony and attempt to flam, it's not going to be good for my health. Why is it a theory?
Well, because it's derived from the first principle. You have an action, academic term called Einstein-Hilbert action. You can derive the dynamical motion, the dynamical equation from that action. So it's derived from a principle of action, and then you can derive the dynamical equation from it, and then therefore you can apply that equation to different specific phenomena and to derive a detailed motion of equation from it. So it's a theory. It's a theory derived from the action of principle, and then it's able to explain a wide range of phenomena.
But for us non-scientific people, treat it as fact. Don't think you can fly or jump and survive a fall. I want to take you to the beginning of time, to that Big Bang. What was there before time existed?
That's another interesting question. So just think about the previous question you have asked. You ask, what is the balloon expand into, right? And now you ask, what is the time before the time? So before the Big Bang, there is no time, because according to Einstein's theory of relativity, the space-time and matter are the same thing. And if before the Big Bang, there is no matter, and therefore there's no space-time. So it's not legitimate to ask the question, what is before that Big Bang? And of course, you may ask, okay, something has to happen at some place, sometime, he said, right? So in that sense, I would say until some early time, we call Planck scale 10 to the minus 43 seconds. 10 to the minus 43 seconds is a 0.43 zeros and 1 second, right? That tiny moment, before that tiny moment, we have no idea what happened before that, because the universe was too hot that we lose all of the photon experiment. We cannot test such a hot status in any lab, so we don't know what happened before that. But theoretically, there's nothing before the Big Bang.
Okay. Theoretically, let's accept that as where science is at this moment in time. Now let's talk about the way we perceive time and space. Let's talk about the constraints of our three-dimensional existence. Let's talk beyond the three-dimensional existence. Let's talk string theory and the hotbed of discovery that is happening out there. Lead us into all of that, Professor.
No problem.
Yeah, so what is string theory? What is this one-dimensional thing that is making scientists so excited?
All right, so string theory, I mean, it sounds like a one-dimensional thing, but actually it's actually a higher dimension theory. So it's actually 11-dimension space-time. So it's high dimension theory. It's trying to merge gravity with other theories of the physics, things like electroweak theory and also strong force and so on. And they try to unify all of the fundamental force together and to form a unified theory. And because the reason of that is because at the very early universe, the temperature was so hot, so high, that different force actually would seem to be like one force. Like different phenomena appear to be one phenomena. So in that sense, you need a unified theory to describe the very initial status and to explain all of the subsequent evolution. So therefore, that's the motivation of string theory. And it's a beautiful theory. It has a beautiful mathematical framework. But unfortunately, we still haven't found any observational or experimental evidence for it. So as you know, for physics, any physics theory, for it to stand, you need experimental evidence to support that theory. And so far, we haven't found anything for string theory. It's just, so far, still a beautiful mathematical framework.
Yeah, and do you think just discoveries there could turn things on its head again?
Possibly. There's many astrophysical observation going on, and there is many ground-based laboratory experiment going on, like particle colliders and so on. And we may find some interesting phenomena that be able to explain or like help us to understand the gravity on the microscopic scale. In that sense, yes, we can test the string theory or other high-dimension theory.
And that's the God particle that you say you are searching for.
God particle, the Higgs particle, was found in 2012, and that confirmed the standard model of particle physics. But to confirm string theory, we need even higher energy, not just that few hundred GeV, but even higher energy to confirm string theory.
But in that subatomic space, and we're talking quantum physics and stuff like that. I mean, we go to church and they tell us what is out there is inside as well. There's a lot of discoveries being made there, is it not? Tell us about quantum physics and the road that it is chartering into our future.
Yes, quantum is very important. I mean, one thing is that at microscopic level that we know the matters, the particle, they behave like the quantum matters. So there's a lot of probability that going on, you know, when you calculate the orbit of the particles and so on. So at the microscopic level, quantum physics is very important. And also, when we think about the subnuclear particles, like the dark matter and so on, their quantum effect also become very important. Recently, my student and I have been investigating this axion dark matter, which is really low massive particles that really small, low mass particle that whose quantum wavelength is the size of the entire galaxy, and we are basically investigating the physical properties of this quantum matter by using astronomy experiments. So and those are the things we're interested in, and so the quantum effect is actually very important for us.
Yeah, you say, I would say that my work is relevant as far as our curiosity about the sky, nature, and the fundamental laws of the universe and the nature of dark energy and dark matter is concerned. And ultimately, you are going to confirm that all 8 billion of us on the planet are citizens of planet Earth, right?
Yes.
Yeah, no, we so caught up in differentiating between us on this planet, and there's this huge universe for us to collectively ponder and understand how small we are in the grand scheme of things.
Absolutely.
We're going to wrap it there. I wanted to ask you, what's the chances, I want to end off where I started, what's the chances of us finding our distant cousins out there somewhere?
Okay, the chances is very small, because we're too far away. You know, I personally think there's a high chance that there is some intelligent species out there, you know, lurking somewhere, either in our galaxy or in the universe somewhere. But because the chances, because the distance is so large, that any communication between us and them would be would be very difficult. And think about if some nearby, let's think about a nearby star, the Alpha Centauri and others. Suppose there's a planet cycling around that star, which is 20 light years away, and send us a signal, maybe say, we are here. And then that signal would take 20 years to reach us. And if we receive somehow that signal, I mean, I don't know which language that signal will be, but they reply back, it will be another 20 years. So because of distance, that becomes impossible.
So it's plausible that there is intelligent life out there, but we're going to have problems reaching and communicating with them. Another question is, should we be inviting them around for tea, or are they going to come here and drink the tea and eat us?
Stephen Hawking has warned us that not to invite any intelligent species, because they can come here and rip off our own planet, and we become colonize our own planet.
And we become slaves.
Yeah, maybe. All of us.
Maybe it's a pattern that will repeat itself, Prof.
Sorry, what? I didn't hear.
Maybe they've been here already, enslaved us, and then let us go. No, I'm talking. I'm just thinking crazy stuff, and that's the kind of stuff that we non-academics will think in the presence of your knowledge. And we appreciate you sharing so freely, Professor Yinzi Ma, Stellenbosch University. Just touching on the mysteries of space and time and mind as well. I think it is just fascinating looking out into space and understanding our capability of at least just being able to see it, not understand it, not comprehend it, but to perceive it. That's the magnificence of human life, and to give names, man. Special. Yet we're busy looking at each other in search of differences. There's nada differences. Nada.